This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
With two little pieces of halacha. One, Rav Soloveitchik talks about this period as an inverse of the mourning period, the 3 weeks between Tisha B'Av, between Sheva Asar Tammuz and Tisha B'Av are the Shloshim, the week in which the 30 days after the death. After experiencing a death, the week that Tisha B'Av falls in is the week of sitting Shiva, and today is Tisha B'Av is like the day that we're in Aninut, the day of the funeral. And I think the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not supposed to greet people on Tisha B'Av, and. You know, when we go into a Shiva house, we wait for the person to speak to us. You know, the mourner. The mourner is feeling pain and can't express out. You don't walk in and say, "Hi, how are you doing? I'm so happy to see you." You let them set the tone. And here we're all mourners. And so we're sort of stuck. And in the sense that we're mourners, we need each other. So it's like we're so happy to be with the people. I mean, comforted to be with people that are dear in our lives and that we haven't seen in a long time. There's hundreds and hundreds of people in this building right now. So that means that you're going to see people that you haven't seen and that give you warm comfort. And we're here to comfort each other in a time that's difficult for each other. And at the same time, we're not going to we want to be sensitive to each other. You know, obviously, Pardes is a non-coercive institution, but I think that they're the natural inclination that we have to reach out and give someone a big hug and say hello because we love that person. We have to sort of feel how we're going to check that today, and know that we're together and that that's meaningful and comforting, and also at the same time. That's not a regular social day. We're here because we want to make it a day that's meaningful and a day that's special and a day that's heavy. So that's the first halacha. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah deals with, well, what do you do when someone, right, because it will inevitably happen because we'll be so happy to see people that we haven't seen in a long time and we'll give them a big hug and we'll just acknowledge. Okay, we'll just acknowledge. And if someone came to you and you don't want to give them a big hug, it's Tisha B'Av, so I can't acknowledge. But we'll just make that space for each other as much as we can possibly support one another on this difficult day. Obviously, as the Mishnah Berurah makes a point, we don't want to create enmity, right? Like the last thing we need on this day is to insult one another also. So we'll try to, you know, with a leaning towards not creating enmity on this day, we want to make that our central point. And the second halacha, in the Mishnah Berurah, in the Shulchan Aruch, is that you're not allowed to learn Torah on this day. There's on Tisha B'Av, the Lomdim Torah, not Torah, not Nevi'im, and not Divrei Chazal. And what are you allowed to learn? You're allowed to learn things that are difficult. And the Shulchan Aruch says, if they're psukei nechama, you have to skip them. You have to skip the psukei nechama. And when I was preparing this, you know, like the regular way you prepare for Shir, long after I'd already submitted this source sheet. There's another halacha, which the Mishnah Berurah also brings down, but I'll say it first from the Rambam. The Rambam says, Yesh sham yamim shekol, it's not on your source sheet, I'm going to read it. Yesh sham yamim shekol Yisrael min tanim behem mipnei tzarot she'eru behen. There are the days of it's in the fifth parak of fasts. There are days that all of Israel fasts because of the bad things that happened to the Jews on those days. And now it says, "Kedei le'orer ha'levavot v'liftoach derechei hatshuva." And the point of the fasting is to wake up our hearts and to open up the paths of tshuva. And it's supposed to help us remind us of the of our wrong deeds, and the things that our forefathers did that are as if we ourselves did them. These are the things that caused us to have these pains. So we want to remember that we're here to fast, to remember the pain, so that we can remember that we want to do tshuva. And the Mishnah Berurah adds to that. He says, "Ulchein chayav kol ish lesum et libo bo tana yamim ulefashfesh b'masav uleshuv behen ki ein ha'ikar ta'anit." And therefore, every person has to like really focus themselves on these days to think about our deeds and to do repentance, because that the main thing is not about the fast; it's about the tshuva that we're going to do. Kemosha katuv anshei Nineveh v'yara Hashem et maaseihem. Just like we saw with Nineveh, that they fasted, but God saw their deeds—not their fast, but their deeds. Vamru Chazal et sakam et tanitam lo ne'emar. Right, it doesn't say I saw that they were fasting. Ela et maaseihem, the deeds they were doing. Ein hatanit ela hachana l'tshuva. The fast is only about preparing for the tshuva. So I've been working. We've been talking in our family a lot. You know, Yerushalayim is a beautiful city, and we live in historical. Where I guess most all of us here are native English speakers, who feel there's no greater schut than that we have to live at this moment in history, to be part of building this country. And when I look in this country, I see redemption. I see the beginning of redemption. An incomplete redemption, no question about it. But I see this is a day, you know, if Yom Kippur is a day of person, that of course there's a lot, as you know, a mirror between Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. And Yom Kippur is a day of personal tshuva. Every one of us gets forgiveness. And I'd like to think of Tisha B'Av as a national day of cheshbon nefesh. A day that we are thinking about ourselves as a nation and how do we move forward. And I want that to be the way we approach this learning. And I went l'chumra. There's no such thing as being machmir that doesn't have a kula and a kula that doesn't have a chumra. You know, a leniency. When you're lenient on one thing, you're strict on another. When you're strict on one thing, you're lenient on another. In this case, I chose to be lenient on Torah and machmir on tshuva, and just thinking and reflecting, because reflecting, we have to go that way. So anything that you might find enjoyable or comforting in this shiur, you have to immediately channel it into that direction of how am I turning that? How is this part of a cheshbon nefesh, of a self-reflection? So that's my way of apologizing for anyone I greet today and anyone that I make happy with my Torah. Okay. So I'll start with a joke. You know it already. You know this because I. How many Jewish mothers does it take to change a light bulb?
Zero.
That's all right, dear.
That's all right, dear. I'll sit in the dark. Okay. How many of you knew that Jewish joke before you walked in here? Okay, not everybody knew this joke, but most of you had it like it's either number 7 or number 13. And this is it's a mantra that we have, something that I work with a lot in my own life. You know, like, why do you have to martyr yourself? I'm not, so a joke can be explored, is a text, which can be explored like other texts. And Parnassus is a place where we like to mine our tradition for cultural capital and have deep thinking about our own traditions. I don't want to overdo it with this joke, okay? It's misogynist. It's a little funny. Jews are funny people. But I think that we love darkness. There's something about us that loves darkness. We're still fasting. For this day, after all of these years. And the fact that we're still fasting 70 years after the birth of our state is, it's not unusual. That's our Jewish tradition. And so I want to like a little bit explore that Jewish tradition. What are the ways in which we see exile, seeing ourselves as exile, as a central motif in our tradition? Maybe I'll just, it comes up in the liturgy. Well, you know, of course, I have, when you walk in the in my house, some of you have been there, right on the left, there's a place where the page is peeled, right? And it's a Zecher LeYerushalayim. I've got a beautiful house in Jerusalem with a fig tree. And I don't have a fig tree. I wanted to plant a fig tree, but instead I planted an apricot tree and a plum tree and a grapevine. Ish tachat tenato, ish tachat gafno, the opposite direction. And there's something very powerful about that. But I still have that place, that ama alama. When you walk into my house, that Jerusalem is unredeemed. So where do we see that in the liturgy? Let's just make put one on the board for you to get you started. Okay, here it is from the Shemona Esrei, 3 times a day. God to Jerusalem, please return. And dwell in it like you promised us, and build it up quickly. A permanent building in our day. And of course, Kisei David Avdecha, and please restore the monarchy. Where else in the liturgy do we see this motif that we're in exile? What?
Return your soul and your Shekinah to Jerusalem. This is building Jerusalem, that's returning.
You return your Shekinah, Yofi. Beautiful. Where else? What? Tivnechomo. Oh, that didn't come off. Can you do that for me? Yerushalayim. You got it. Tivnechomo Yerushalayim. Okay, good. That's not the one you were talking about. You were talking about which is the last pasuk from Echa. But we put it into the central piece. It's the second last pasuk in Echa. We put it to the center of our liturgy. Into the center of our liturgy. Hashivenu Hashem. Okay, so you see why I don't teach singing for a living. We're good. The temperature in here is good, right? They were checking to see how our temperature is. Another one? Give me another one. Mindy.
Two, we have Vitachazena and Enu, which is later in Amidah, Peshuv Chayotiyom Rachanit. And the whole of Musaf is all about the carbonate that we used to bring and we can't anymore. Oh,
beautiful. Beautiful. Anyone else want to share one? Your Katamazon, beautiful. Okay, the third paragraph, the fourth paragraph. Uvnei Yerushalayim, the fourth paragraph is all about, it was set for, it's a remembrance of Beitar, which also happened today, and we'll be talking about a little bit more shortly. Sanes l'kabetz kaluyatenu, hashivenu shoftenu kivarishona. Okay, the l'chadodi. There's almost nothing really in our liturgy, which is not like hearkening to Yemehem Kikedem and time where things were better and how we want to go back there. I think we can all agree that our reality is completely imperfect. But I think there's another message that it used to be better, that there was some ideal world that used to exist, that we wish we were there again. And so now I want to think about how did we get there? Okay, how do we find ourselves in this situation? And with that, I want to. Let's look at before I send you to Chavruta or let you turn to each other for 5 minutes in Chavruta. Let's look at source number one on your source sheet. Minayin she'ema mamitin ela bifnei habayit. How did we look at it? What is it that we lost with the Chorban? Okay, it's not just a beautiful building. We have lost also the ability, it says, from whence do we know that one executes only when the temple exists? Okay, in the time of the temple, you can exist. You can have capital punishment. Talmud Lomer, me'im mizbachi tikachenu lamut. Right, from my altar, you should take him to die. If someone deserves to die, you should take them, even if they're taking sanctuary refuge on the Karnot HaMizbeach. If they deserve to die, you'll take them from there. But that seems to mean, ha, im yesh mizbeach atamimit. If there's a mizbeach that they could have theoretically, of course they're not if they could have theoretically grabbed onto the Karnot HaMizbeach, then you could execute them. And if not, you can't execute them. Okay, that's the limud. You probably are all familiar with the principle before you come here that you can't execute people when we don't have the temple. But that's the limud for it. Okay, can we just get at for a second what is the thinking behind it? Like, why does that make sense?
Because you could only have a level of divine justice in the temple, and you can't be sure that the person's really guilty.
Okay, because God lives in the temple, and God is truth with a capital T and justice with a capital J. And when we sit there, okay, we are the seat of divine justice on earth, proof of our chosenness, of God's presence, of justice which belongs to the king, and we are the representative of the ruler, right? That's what we can do when we're there, okay? Anybody want to add to that? I know you're hungry. That's the main answer. I think Mindy, do you want to add?
You could sort of say we don't have true, complete sovereignty if we don't have a temple, and unless we have sovereignty, it's inappropriate to have.
Beautiful. Okay, that's what I have here for in my number three, which is the corollary of what you've said is that we have a legitimate government. This is the symbol of our legitimate government, and in some ways we aren't a full legitimate government without that, and so we need that in order to execute people. And I would just add that the altar is a symbol of protection and atonement, and capital punishment, I know this is somehow connected to that kind of atonement. It's a little self-sacrifice, right? That we do there before the grace of God go I, right? That's the sacrifice. You put your hands on the sacrifice, and you sacrifice the sacrifice because it's dying in your place. But when you die in your place, okay, you also are getting kapara. You're getting atonement for your sins. That's the idea. That's the theoretical justification. that the Torah puts forward for how you can execute someone, just to punish them. Okay, we don't do that. Just to punish someone, just to take out our societal rage, that wouldn't make sense. But to have a sense that they can atone for, that person can atone for their sins, we as a community can atone for, shofech dam ha'adam b'damo yishafach, the kibitzel b'lokim barat ha'adam. So that's why we need the bite in order to execute someone. And I want to spend a few minutes thinking on the loss of the temple as it relates, or the loss of our jurisdiction, okay? This was my starting point for thinking about this issue, because I wrote my dissertation on rabbinic criminal punishment in the Talmudic period. And the rabbis basically, you're familiar with this. We don't do any of the things that it says in the Torah. And the reason why we don't do anything that it says in the Torah to punish people for their crimes is because we think we don't have the power, the authority to do those things. And so we made up other punishments in their stead, because we have to function as a world, and how are we going to function as a society? But it's interesting to me that the rabbis, they embraced this. They made up something new, and they put the other things aside. They said, we can't do these things in the Torah. So I want to just take a few of the key sources on why did the rabbis say, we can't do, we can't claim that authority that comes with having the Sanhedrin at the temple. So you look at the sources number 2 and number 3. The source number 3, the core story in there is a story about about Betar, okay, about the Bar Kokhba revolt. But when we talk about, there are 5 things that happened on this terrible day. Okay, do we remember what they are? Should we do a little review exercise? Let's see if collectively as a room we can get them all 5. What are the things that happened on this terrible day?
The Inquisition.
The Inquisition? I only got up to the Mishnah. I wouldn't be surprised. Of course. So I'm citing from the 5 that are cited in the Mishnah. Okay, what? Chetz HaMeraglim, that's the first one. Okay, the 12 spies. The Luchot HaBrit happens on Yud Zayin B'Tammuz, but very good, you were listening in school. It's all one long period. They're related, of course. We'll talk about that later. The big ones. Bar Kokhba revolt. Okay, they call that Betar. Okay, and that's what we're on. That's the one that we're going to have here. And in between that, of course, Nechrav HaBayit HaRishon VaSheni. And the last one is Yerushalayim was plowed over. Okay, so good. We did it as a group. Good. The main story in number 3 is a story of the Bar Kokhba revolt, which also happened today. It's a difficult story, but also a telling story. I give you 5 minutes. Your chavrutas, somebody on your right or on your left. Obviously you can't move too much in this space, but just enjoy that story and think about how are we relating to our criminal, our authority to punish criminally. Okay, I'm going to bring everyone back together. All right. Thank you. I know it's not easy to pull you away. Look, you're familiar with this. These are well known, but we see them with a little bit different eyes when we read them today, I think. 40 years before that, just the Yerushalmi, 40 years before the destruction of the temple, capital cases were taken from Israel. Okay, capital cases were taken from Israel, right? And in the days of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, monetary cases were taken from Israel. Okay, we're victims. This is something that happened to us, right? But then the Yerushalmi pipes in. Rashbi said, Berech Rachmana Leana Chakim Bidun. Baruch Hashem. We didn't have it in us anyway. Okay, we weren't smart enough. Well, that's a literal translation. We weren't smart enough, but meaning we couldn't handle the responsibility that was involved. And so what you have here in the Yerushalmi already, and is much more pronounced in the Bavli, is the sense of tension between, on the one hand, oh my gosh, we are victims. It's being taken away from us, and steadily taken away from us. First, we're losing our chance to do capital cases in, let's say, the year 30. And of course, lots can be written about that. Now, thousands, but thousands of pages have been, because, of course, at the end of 40 years, because I hear over there Jesus was killed in 33, and we lost our chance to do capital punishment in 30, so it's definitely not our fault, and I think that's what we have. We should hold on to that, but that's not the point of the thing here. Okay, the point here, what's 40?
We grew.
What?
40 years we were wandering in the desert.
Why were we wandering in the desert for 40 years?
It's a lifetime.
What? It's a lifetime. It's 40 weeks of pregnancy, my friend. It's a, you're right, it's like a whole. But that's what what do we call that? Gesticulation. The gestation.
And she gesticulates.
There you go. The gestation. Okay, I was just to see if you guys were watching. Were awake. It's not easy. So the it's a period of gestation, and there's a and things are cooking up. The destruction of the temple is something that's cooking up for us for 40 years before it happens. Our exile isn't something that was born in a day, but something that gestated and then was born. And we're victims on the one hand of it. On the other hand, okay, then after, right, at 70, the destruction. 135, the Bar Kokhba revolt, the loss of, right, in the time of Rashbi, the loss of our last sense of independence. And Rashbi says at the end of it, Baruch Hashem. Okay, we're powerless, but Baruch Hashem. And you see something very similar in this next source. Rav Kahana says, Keshechala Rabbi Yishmael bar Rabbi Yossi. Shochule. When Rabbi Yishmael got sick, so they sent him, Rabbi, emor lanu shnayim shloshat varim shemarta lanu mishum avicha. Can you share some of those stories? Right now, Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, we're talking here about somebody who is like, he remembers the good old days. That's what we think is like, let's call on him to help us when we see the loss with the death of Rabbi Yishmael. We're going to lose not only Rabbi Yishmael, but also Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta. We're going to lose these old traditions. And it turns out, I would have thought, where it's like, we want to remember the good old days, the times when the temple still existed. But interestingly, the traditions that he shares with us are exactly the opposite traditions.
When did he live?
I didn't write it down here, so I'm afraid to mouth off. It's being recorded. Will you look it up for me on Google? Did you find it already? 180 years before the temple was destroyed, the evil empire spread over Israel, right? Things are already starting to get worse. We feel the hitdarderut hadorot. You've got to love it. Hitdarderut hadorot. Things are always getting, what does it mean, generations? Things are degenerating. Things are getting worse all the time. And and 40 years before the destruction of the temple, the Sanhedrin, Galta Sanhedrin v'yashva labachanut. Okay, the Sanhedrin will do, Galta, exiled. So it's already, it's a little bit ambiguous.
But we have this idea, galta, I'm leaving it holding because it becomes clear. L'may hilchata, amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avdimi lamar shelo danu dine knasot. They couldn't judge cases of fines, which seems to be similar to monetary cases, but it could be that there's a difference. For sure there's a difference in the Gemara, there's a difference between dine knasot and dine mamonot. Dine knasot nida Sanhedrin, dine mamonot can be judged by, never mind. That's it, the amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Here's the story. Zachor Oto HaIsh L'Tov, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava Shmo. We remember this guy for the good, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava, that if it weren't for him, Nishtakhu Dinei Knasot Yisrael, then we would have lost our ability to judge fines. What? Nishtakhu? Ligarsinu, we would just learn them. We wouldn't. Why would we forget them? We'll just learn them. No. Ela batal dinei knasot miYisrael. We'll learn the rules. Of course, we'll keep learning the rules. But we wouldn't be able to do them. Why? Because gazru malchut rasha gzera. That everyone who is anyone who gives smicha, ordains somebody, shall be killed. Everyone who gets smicha shall be killed. Any city that has that has smicha take place in its boundaries will be destroyed, and anything even in the metropolitan area will be uprooted. Okay, so that is to say, communal punishment. If you take it upon yourself to give smicha, you can expect everyone in your midst to suffer. And Ma'asar Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, he goes halach v'yashav ben shnei harim gedolim. He said, "Uben shnei ayarot gedolot." He went and sat in the middle of nowhere, in no man's land. Ben shnei tkumei shabbat, ben usha l'shvaram, v'samach sham chamisha skenim. And he ordained five rabbis. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, and maybe even also Rabbi Nechemia. Kevan shekiru behen oivim, amar lehem bani rutsu. Right, as soon as they got word, they the lookout says people are the enemies are coming. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says, "Run for your lives!" They said, "Rabbi." Matiel lecha, right? You have to remember the scene. Okay, of course, you get the scene. It's like, you know, somebody in his 70s is giving smicha, the young guys are they're young guys. So they say, he says to them, "Run for your lives!" And he says, "I can't do anything. Hareni ani mutalifa necha ke'evet shein lo hovchim. There's an eye and a rock that can't, no matter, you can't turn me over. Okay, but you guys run for your lives, and they made it away. Lo zazu misham ad shenasu legufo gimel meot lulamiot shel barzel v'asau legufo kichbara. I am just emphasizing reading it so we can sort of feel like this is what we were enduring. Not just that the five of them had made their escape, but before Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava had moved, the Romans came and they penetrated his body with 300 spears and made his body into a sieve. Okay, that was the kind of they brutalized his body so that we had a spiritual persecution, a physical persecution in every way. This is the little things that we're commemorating today. These are the little things we're commemorating today. But what you feel is the sense of how big. We don't have a full understanding of mazas smicha. Okay, what is this thing called ordination? The real thing of ordination. Okay, the real thing of ordination that you can sit on the Sanhedrin. It has to do with the ability to judge knasot, we see here, the ability to do capital cases, maybe the ability. It's controversial. What are the various things that you need smicha for? But you see that smicha was considered so important that it was really willing. It was worth taking this. That the Romans were willing to go to this huge extent in order to keep us from having it. And we were fighting for our lives, but like really clinging to our tradition and doing what absolutely needed to be done, even willing to murder ourselves in order to hold on to it. because that is our autonomy and that is our sense of our tradition, of preserving our tradition. And so that's what makes this next piece so crazy, right? Because what that is about holding on to our sense that we have a chain of tradition that represents justice with a capital J and truth with a capital T. Forget the cat. Let's assume, right? It's about the symbol of our, the depth of our authority. And Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, obviously it's not about Dinei Knesset because we held on to our Dinei Knesset. Rather, Shelo Danu Dinei Nefashot, 40 years before the temple was destroyed, the Sanhedrin Galta, my time, why the Sanhedrin was exiled, they stopped doing capital punishments. That's because of the Mechilta that we saw. But this line, Kevan dechazu denefishi lerotzchim velo yachli lebeidan. They saw that there were so many murderers, they couldn't really judge them properly. And they said, Mutav nigli mimakom lemakom. Let's put ourselves in exile. Let's give up our autonomy, our legitimacy, our symbol of divine truth, and where we sit, our connection to God, right? That's really about our connection to God. So that we won't have to convict people. That you'll do according to what is told to you from that place, which shows that the place is essential, right, to our ability to judge. Okay, so you can hear two things on this day. That's Tisha B'Av. One is, oh my gosh, look how important what is it that we're mourning? Okay, someone asked me last night, how do I feel about the third temple and where does the third temple fit into my relationship to Tisha B'Av? You see here that it's not about the building. Okay, it's about the makom, about the connection that is about having the ability to directly speak to God. Tishkom betocha kasher dibarta. God, dwell in that place like you promised so that we can have access to you, God, so that we can have that sense of legitimacy, and we have lost our legitimacy. So that that's what Tisha B'Av is about, loss of our national autonomy and our divine authority, and we've lost that. And yet, 40 years before, the Sanhedrin decided, yalla, let's go. We can't bear to have it. It's too much pressure for us. Let's give it up and go by ourselves. Okay, so there's tension in this story between, on the one hand, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, who's willing to sacrifice himself to hold on to that tradition. But you know, we don't know exactly what happened, but we're aware that it wasn't long before we lost our smicha. Okay, we've got our ability also to ordain. It's not exactly clear when that happens, but towards the end, Eretz Yisrael lost its primacy vis-a-vis Bavel. In Bavel, there is no such thing as ordination, and so it's something that only happens in Eretz Yisrael. So as the strength of our tradition moved to Bavel, we lost that power anyway. Redacting the story, redacting the Gemara, are well aware that this is what Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava thought, that this was so important, but we've already lost it. By the time it's being ordained, by the time this story is being redacted, it's already long gone. Okay, so we're holding on the one hand, this is something so very precious, Hamakom Goreim, the smicha, chain of tradition, connection with God. On the other hand, we can't handle this authority, we're going to go into exile by choice. All right, you see in source number 4 that it's not just here, it's also with Misha Rabu Haratz Chanim Batlu. Okay, paying attention to my time, I gotta keep moving. You see it with the murderers became numerous, they got rid of the Egla Rufa, the breaking of the red heifer, which was a way of us getting communal. Also in the same time period, by the way. Similarly, when adulterers became too nervous, the bitter water ceased, right? We couldn't use the sota. Again, it's a way of saying whether these punishments or these ordeals are symbolic of an ability to access divine truth. Mm-hmm. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai abolished them. Okay, he said, forget about it. We can't do it. So there's two pieces. On the one hand, we're being victimized again and again. Terrible things are happening to us. We're constantly going into exile. On the other hand, we sort of like embrace it in this crazy way. And I want to show you that also with respect to destruction of the temple. Source number, I'm skipping along, number 7. All right, this famous source. I'm going to assume a little bit of familiarity with it. We'll talk about it again at 1 o'clock in the next panel. I'll be teaching this, the first part of the story that's not on your source sheet now, but you'll remember that Jerusalem was under siege. Things were very, very terrible. There was horrible hunger. The Jews couldn't get along. We were infighting. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was trying to convince them, let's make a deal. And there was no deal to be made. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what does he do? He sneaks out of the city. How does he sneak out of the city? In a coffin. Okay, he climbed into the coffin, my friends. Okay, the coffin is a symbol. Okay, it's a symbol of the death of Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. And he climbs into it himself. And then, of course, he gets out. There's a symbol of the resurrection also. Okay, but so then when he gets out, he meets, as you know, with Vespasian, and he says to Vespasian, peace unto you, right? You're the king. And Vespasian says, oh, what are you talking about? What happened to my underlining here? Boy. I'm sorry that it's not underlined because it's going to make a little. I have to skip. He has a little bit of an encounter with Vespasian. Vespasian says, "If I'm the king, why didn't you come here before? If I'm the king, and how do you know that I'm the king?" And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knows how to cite the sources to prove that he's the king. And now I'm at the bigger jump. As for your question, the next paragraph insert. As for your question, why, if you are a king, I did not come to you till now? The answer is that the Birione among us did not let us. There were those zealots, and they wouldn't let us go out because they wanted us to fight. And he said to them, okay, Vespasian says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if there's a jar of honey round which a serpent is wound, right? The jar of honey is Jerusalem. Okay, the serpent is the Birionim, the zealots. Would you not break the jar to get rid of the serpent? Don't you have to burst out of the walls of Jerusalem in order to do what you have to do in order to get rid of those Birionim and come to me? I'm the king. Okay, says Vespasian. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could give no answer. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the year 70, right? Rabbi Yosef, or some say Rabbi Akiva, but either way, it's either 135 300 or even later. Applied to him the verse, God turn the wise backward and make their foolish knowledge. Meaning, God really tripped him up. What was wrong with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that he didn't have an answer? He ought to have said, we take a pair of tongs and grip the snake and kill it and leave the jar intact. Like, when you, right, meaning, you, Vespasian, you've got tongs. Use those tongs against the Birionim, against the zealots, and leave Jerusalem in place. Don't destroy Jerusalem because of these rotten thugs. Okay, it's a few bad apples. This siege is just a few bad apples. Do something about the few bad apples. Take out the zealots, but don't make all the people suffer because of that, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So that's what Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef think that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai should have said, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doesn't say it. Listen to this again. At this point, the messenger comes to the Rome saying the emperor is dead and they want to make you the head. And Vespasian says, wow, you're so smart. You anticipated exactly what was going to come. why didn't you come to me to now? And he says, I already told you. He says, but I told you! You should have come. If I'm the king and you're so smart to anticipate where things are coming, you should have come. Okay, he says, fine. I'm going to take over as Caesar. However, somebody's going to come and take my place, right? Meaning Jerusalem. I have a space in leaving right now, but Jerusalem is still going. You're pretty smart. Make one wish, and I will grant it. And this is everybody knows what he says. The thing he says at this time. Give me Yavna v'chochomeha. And the family, as it is here in this version of the story, the family of Rabban Gamliel and a physician to heal Rav Tzadok. And here, Rav Yosef and Rav Akiva, some say Rabbi Akiva, applied to him the verse again. Meshiv chachamim achor v'da'atam yisakel. What was wrong with you, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, at that moment? If you have one wish, don't ask for $100. Okay? Ask for $1,000,000. What should he have asked for? Ask for Yerushalayim. Okay, so there's so Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yosef are mad at Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai because he didn't answer for what he was supposed. Well, he didn't answer what he should have answered. All right, but this is going on. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the hero in this story. Okay, now there's a critique of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai perhaps in the story, but maybe not. Okay, who wants to defend Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Mm-hmm.
Well, according to our tradition, Yavna was the genesis of the Mishnah, which was the genesis of Talmud. And I'm speculating. If we had Yerushalayim, maybe we wouldn't have learned in the style that we supposedly did. I say supposedly because there's critical scholarship that says maybe Yavna didn't even happen. I don't know.
Okay. Do you hear what's in everything that... What's your name?
I'm a little embarrassed because I just received some account. And I'm a new rabbi. My name's Ken Rosenstein.
Ken?
Rosenstein.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Ken.
He's saying a few things here. One, okay, because there was something great that was going to come out of Yavne. Mm-hmm. And two, and therefore, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, let go of Yerushalayim. Because you have to let go of Yerushalayim. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was aware that it's not that he didn't think asking for Jerusalem. It's that he decided not to. He decided to embrace the exile at that point. Crazy. Okay? But that's... So here we... What are we doing on this day? Okay, here it is, Tisha B'Av. We're remembering that we don't have the Sanhedrin, that we don't have Dinei Knesset, that we don't have Dinei Mamonot, that we don't have capital punishment, that we don't have... that we don't have the temple. And it turns out that in all of these cases... We sort of embrace that possibility at the time. What is going on here? Okay, what are we going to do with ourselves? I just say like this. If I had, I get it, okay? On the other hand, the marriage isn't going well, okay? But when my marriage isn't going well, I've got a great marriage therapist. That I could turn people to. I would go for mediation, for reforms. I'm not going to just throw out the temple. I would try to, with all of those things, right? Like, do you see how we tried to build up two things at once? One, oh my gosh, there was so much to lose. And on the other hand, we embraced it. So we embraced the loss. So I want to just, like, why not go for marriage counseling? Why didn't we try to do reforms from within? Why did we send ourselves into voluntary exile? So we're bemoaning the loss of the mechanism of truth, of kapara, the tools for restoring peace, the stability of the purity of the land. We're miserable that we don't have them. On the other hand, we don't have them because things were so terrible, right? There was a punishment of natural consequences. Our own bad behavior brought it upon ourselves on the one hand. On the other hand, we're agents in our own destruction, voluntarily giving up these tools. And we see it with Egler. We see it with those things, with Egler Rufa, with Sota, with Dine Nefesho, with Dine Mamonot. Now we have to say something to daven for later on when you say, Hashiva Shofteinu Kevarishona. Okay, restore our judges as days of old. This is what we're going for. Dad.
Was Yochanan ben Zakkai merely acquiescing in the realities of the situation, and perhaps knew that Vespasian would never grant a request to leave Jerusalem alone. Rather, he simply said, look, under the circumstances, this is the best we can do.
Okay, so the Gemara answers your answer exactly. So Baruch Shekivanta, that the but I think that the question sometimes is better than the answer, right? Maybe that it's possible. Okay, but it's possible also that Rabbi Yochanan, especially now that I've painted this motif for you. Okay, both things are true, both possibilities. Maybe he couldn't get anyway. As we say, what's the history of what's exactly happened to here? Also, maybe it was a best case scenario. Maybe he said, you know what, the law for what I can go build somewhere else, it will be worth it. I don't have a lot of time. I want to do one story that is just so important to me. I wanted to give you a chavruta, but I didn't leave myself time, so let's go back to it. It is source number 5. Source number 5. You've probably learned it, maybe not on this day. It's powerful. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Pam echad hayiti ma'alech b'derech v'nichnasti l'chorva echad m'chorvot Yerushalayim l'itpalel. One time Rabbi Yossi was walking along the way and he went, source number 5, it's at the bottom of page 2. He went into one of the destroyed buildings of Jerusalem to daven. V'ba Eliyahu zechor l'tov v'shamar li ala petach. This is Rabbi Yossi speaking of himself. Okay, and Eliyahu came, may you be remembered for the good, and guarded me while I daven. Ad shesiyamti tefilati. And then lachar shesiyamti tefilati amar li. Right, you know, like you thought he was just there to guard, but then it turns out he wanted to have a talk with you. Okay, when Rabbi he says to me, Shalom alecha, Rabbi. Amarti lo shalom alecha, Rabbi Umari. Hello, Eliyahu, my master, my teacher, pleased to you. Amarli, bani, mipnei ma nichnasta l'chorva zo. Just out of curiosity, what were you doing going into that chorva? Amarti lo, lipalel. Did you see me? I went to pray. Amarli, hayalecha lipalel b'derech. What? You should have davened on the way. Amarti lo, mitzureheiti. Okay, Rabbi Yossi gets, like all of us, gets a little defensive. He says, mitzureheiti, shema yifsiku bi ovrei drachim. I was afraid people would interrupt me while I was davening. people who were on the way. Amarli, hayalecha lipalel tfila k'tzara. You should have davened a short davening. Botasha'a lamadati mimenu shlosha devarim. Lamadati she'en nichnasin l'chorva. Lamadati shemitpalim b'derech. Lamadati shemitpalel b'derech mitpalel tefilah k'tzara. Okay, I learned that we don't go into destroyed places. I learned that you daven on the way, and I learned that that when you daven on the way, you daven a short prayer. Okay, let's just take it at the level. Okay, it's just stam halachas that Eliyahu came along to tell you, but there's something to him. Okay, this is Eliyahu interacting with Rabbi Yossi. Why did Rabbi Yossi go into the chorva?
He thought it was more holy.
What?
He thought it was a more holy place to pray.
He thought it was a holy place to pray. My son broke his shoulder. We talked about this yesterday. Okay, he broke his shoulder on the first day of summer vacation. First day before summer vacation. Had to cancel all of his plans. When I said to him, why did Rabbi Yossi go into the chorva? He said he wanted to mope. Okay?
He wanted to mope.
It's like something terrible happened and he just wanted to sit there in the misery. He didn't hesitate for a second, right? Like, because when things, in his words, suck, okay? Yeah. It was terrible. So what do we get? He wanted to mope. And Eliyahu says to him, go ahead.
Well, I think he wanted to mope, but also to hear God's response to him personally.
Okay, good. Let's get to that. Great. Good. Hold on to it. So he went in there because he wanted to mope. And he went in there because he wanted to talk to God. But Eliyahu says to him, pray on the way. What's the way? What does it mean to pray on the way? What?
Pray as you go.
Pray as you go. What's the way? Where? What? What? Life. Get back to life. Okay. Stop moping. Well, there are a few things you can do. You can. You could watch TV. Okay. The World Cup's on. You could take long walks. You at the end. So don't mop. Get on the way. Just make the best of it. That's what Eliyahu was saying. And he says to him, and yet Rabbi Yossi says, but you could pray, but people will interrupt me. I won't be able to pray under those circumstances. Pray, it's filah katzara. Why it's filah katzara? Why a short prayer?
Maybe you won't mope as much if you're doing a shorter prayer. You don't have time to, like, mope.
That's right. You keep it moving because you got to say little and do much. Filah katzara is about, like, don't whine to God about the destroyed temple. Okay, get on your way to rebuilding it and daven less and build more. Okay, Tefillah Ktzara is about spending less time in the moping and the moving, more time in the moving forwards. Okay, that's the that's what Eliyahu says. But then this is crazy because then what happens? Okay, back to it. So Amarli. Bani, ma kol. This is still Eliyahu talking to Rabbi Yossi. Amarli bani, ma kol shamata b'chor vazo. What did you hear when you were in that destroyed building? Amarti lo shamati bat kol sheminahemet kiyonava omeret oy levanim shebavanotehem echravti et biti v'saravti et hichalivi glati levin haumot. What voice did you hear? I heard God. A divine echo, which was purring like a Yonah, or like a bird, and saying, woe to the children that because of their sins, I destroyed my own house, and I burnt my own sanctuary, and I exiled them into the amongst the nations. Amarli, Eliyahu says to him, Chayecha v'chaye roshecha, I swear on your life. It's not only at that moment that you that God speaks that way. But every single day, three times a day, God says it that way. Three times when God davens Shacharit Mincha Mariv, and plus every time that the Jewish people go into the Batei Knesiot and the Batei Mitrash. Va'onim, Yehei Shmei HaGadol Mivorach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every time that we cry out in praise of God, God is Minanei Rosho, bows his head, nods his head, and says, Ashrei HaMelech Shemekalsino Tova Ve'Tokach. Happy is the king, the ruler, who is praised in the ruler's house in this way. Ma li la'av. Shigla et banav. Woe to the father who had to exile his children. Oy lahem levanim. And woe to the children that were exiled from their father's table. Why did he go into the Chorva? Eliyahu says to him, how can you go into the Chorva? You've got to rebuild. You've got to move forwards. You've got to daven tefillah katzara. And by the way, what happened to you while you were in there? What? You heard God crying for your pain? You heard God crying for your pain, and you heard that God is crying with you three times a day at every moment? Your father... I said this to you already, but I went last week to pick someone up who was on her way to Kever Rachel. I was on my way to Kever Rachel. And she was a hitchhiker walking through the checkpoint. She was scared to death. And she got in the car and she said, I was so scared. I've got 7 kids at home. And I said, I was saying, Abba, Abba, I just have to see Ima. I just have to see Ima take care of me. What about my children? She had to be in that space. And we have to be in that space. What's in that space? Okay. So there's two things, and we're feeling them both, which is the terrible tragedy of all of the things that have happened to us, and also the way that we have sort of fed into them. I'm feeling it very profoundly this year. I prepared this class some years ago. This year, I spent a lot of the year writing about sex trafficking and prostitution, and about sexual harassment. And it's really hard stuff. It's really hard stuff. One of the things that's really hard to know is that more than 80%, some people think 100% of the women who are working, who are selling their sex on the streets, whether you think they're trafficked or choosing to sell their sex on the street, were sexually abused as minors. And there's a tendency also amongst rape victims and sexual harassment victims to be victimized over and over again. Mm-hmm. And there's something that is, no one ever asks to be victimized, and no one ever deserves to be victimized, and there is no excuse, not for victimizing someone or, you know, thinking you're paying for services of someone who can't really consent, but the we find ourselves in a cycle of being repeatedly victimized, and that was when I read that, as I read these sources again, I couldn't help but go to that place. And I want to say that we have to be so careful, right? And that's why this day of mourning is not a day of feeling like we want to go into sadness and we want to mope and we want to be victimized, because that's a place where we can feel love from God. No. We want to go to that place because that's a place where we can move to build Yavne. And there's something very, very fruitful in what's the power of the darkness? Why is it that we have to go, with all due respect to light? there's a power to sitting in the dark. And there's a reason why we sit there once a year, and it's not because we want to be victimized again, okay? It's Mary Douglas writes about the tremendous potential of darkness in deserts, and I'll just read you, I didn't put it on the source sheet, I'm just reading one paragraph from her book. Thank you. Granted, the disorder spoils pattern. It also provides the material of pattern. Order implies restriction from all possible materials. A limited selection has been made from all possible relations, and a limited set has been used. So disorder, by implication, is unlimited. No pattern has yet been realized in it, but its potential for patterning is indefinite. That is why, though we seek to create order, we do not simply condemn disorder. We recognize that it is destructive to existing patterns, but also that it has potentiality. It symbolizes both danger and power. Ritual recognizes the potency of disorder. In the disorder of the mind, in the minds, in dreams, feints, and frenzies, ritual expects to find powers and truths which cannot be reached by conscious effort. Energy to command and special powers of healing come to those who abandon rational control for a time. I got five. The luchot. Okay, we all are aware of makom shebale tshuva. I'm jumping on to sources 12 through 17, 18 in the last 3 minutes of my class. Okay, Rabbi Abahu says, in the place where Balei Tshuva stand, even the holy righteous cannot stand, right? Once you've been in the darkness, you can get to something that you couldn't get to had you not been there. And we see that in the breaking of the Luchot. Okay, the breaking of the Luchot, it's just crazy. I wish I could make it alive for you, but if you imagine God gives the Luchot are written by God with the finger of God, and Moshe's holding those, and he sees them and he breaks them on the ground. And in source 16, which source is it? Oh, there it is. It's 14. Reish Lakish says, there are times when the annulments of the Torah may be the foundation of the Torah. For it is written, which thou did break, right? Asher Shivarta. And in the words Asher Shivarta, you hear Yasher Koach She Shivarta. The Holy One, blessed be He, said Yasher Koach She Shivarta. Okay, you did the right thing. Why did you do the right thing? Because the next set of luchot that are built, on the one hand, they're never quite the same. They're not written in the words of God, and they're not built by God. They're made by Moshe. But these are the luchot that are enduring. Okay, the second luchot have an ability to endure in a way that the first ones did not endure. And so we have there's a power, I let go of everything else. There's a power in going to someplace broken and rebuilding, right? From that, getting out of the coffin and going to Yavne, we're able to rebuild something on the ashes that is somehow stronger than we could have done by reconstructing, by going into marriage counseling and trying to build, to firm up a broken building. So we embrace exile because we believe that we can come out of it in a stronger way, right? We break the luchot, that by breaking the luchot, we feel the power of the luchot. You don't know what you've got till it's gone, but then you know where you're trying to get back to. So we come back, we rebuild, we restore the luchot, we pray for restoration, chadesh shemeinu kekedem. We're answered, but the restoration, we're not yet where we've come from. We're in a place of darkness, and we're still trying to move forwards. We're going to sit with both the ways that sometimes we have to let go in order to come forwards, the ways we really don't want to be someone who victimizes, who allows herself to be victimized again, or is unable to. That's not what it's about. It's about seeing the power of the darkness, hearing the voice of the Yonah, in that place, and then being able to move out of that place firmly and quickly, and davening on the way, and a tefillah katsara. So my hope for my prayer for all of us is we still. And I'm going to quote Michael Balzer. He says, "We still believe, or many of us do, what the Exodus first taught, and what has commonly been taken to teach about the meaning and possibility of politics, and about its proper form. First, that wherever you live, it's probably Egypt, meaning we're in exile all the time. Second, that there's a better place, a world more attractive, a promised land. And third, that the way to the land is through the wilderness. There's no way to get there except by joining together and marching." So we want to sit with Rabbi Yossi, right? Both to sit with the depth. Today is the day that we sit in the Chorva. We hear the Yonah min ahemet v'omeret oy levanim. We cry together with God, and we know that God is crying with us on these days, and we need that. But we need that so that we can get out there, and we can daven, and we can daven quickly, and we can daven on the way, and we can build ourselves to a stronger, stronger place. May it be a day of cheshbon nefesh, a meaningful fast, for each of us and for our Mr.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.